Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 802. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about waterfalls and glaciers and a geyser, Diamond Beach, ice caves, and an unpronounceable volcano as we go to southern Iceland. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Iceland. I'd like to welcome to the show Fredrik Poulsen, who is a hotelier in the southern coast of Iceland and has come to talk to us about why we should go to Iceland. Fredrik, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
And what is your connection with Iceland?
I am born here. Mm-hmm. I'm born in the north of Iceland, actually. And my father was a farmer and the whole family was in farming. At that time, it was quite common to have many kids, so I'm one of seven. I was raised, I always say, by my four older sisters, so that's why I'm so depressed.
Okay. And we're talking about a South Iceland itinerary today, and why should someone go to South Iceland?
I would probably have to use the whole day to try to explain everything, but the Americans, they mostly come for a week, 5 days, 7 days. Mm-hmm. And you can easily split Iceland into several areas for that reason. South Iceland, South and Southwest Iceland, is more or less open all year. It's to say that it's very seldom we have any problems with the roads or anything like that. Can be occasionally. But most people who come to our area, they fly into Keflavik, of course. That's the only airport, only international airport in the southwest corner. Mm-hmm. And they rent a car, most of them. Quite many, though, especially if you're traveling together with your family or some friends, you might get a driver and a guide taking you around. But quite, I would say 80% of our guests, they rent a good car mm-hmm. at the airport and they drive themselves. We are located, my hotel, Hotel Rangau, we are located 150 kilometers, or thereabout, just about 100 miles out of the Keflavik Airport. So quite many people go straight away to us, especially because almost all the flights from the US, they come in the morning. So you can drive during the day, even if it's in the middle of the winter, mm-hmm. it's about 2 hours drive and you can easily do that in the daylight. Many people don't like to drive in the dark and I understand that in the wintertime. So that's what we always recommend. If you want to be more or less on your own, staying with us, that you fly into Keflavik and you rent a car there.
Well, and in my experience, it's easy to navigate Iceland. It's a little hard to get lost because, well, you know, the old joke about it, what do you do if you get lost in an Icelandic forest is stand up. And you don't have a lot of roads. And so you follow the road.
You more or less follow the road. And it so happens that practically, I wouldn't say it. Well, it's almost true that only road number one around the country is a paved one. Most of the others are not paved. Mm-hmm. They are the gravel. So if you go somewhere where the roads get bad, you know that you're probably not on the right way. But it's very easy to navigate around Iceland. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And the traffic is not very heavy either. It is quite an easy task.
Well, and also if you need to ask for directions, there's quite a few people who are going to be able to understand you and give you some help.
Yes, it is. We speak, I would say, almost everybody younger than 50 or 50, 60 would speak English quite well. And so it's quite easy. And on the whole, I can say that we are very friendly people and helpful. So if you need any assistance of whatever kind that is, that you will get that right on the road.
Excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary are we going to recommend? We're starting in Reykjavik, and then where is our first stop? You're saying you would recommend we actually drive all the way out 130 kilometers, was it?
Yeah, something like that, 150. Yes, from Reykjavik, it's about 100 kilometers. Quite many people like to stay in Reykjavik one night or so, at least to get to know the city. Some not. So it's up to, of course, up to people. If you drive straight out to us and we would be your guidance, give you a guidance, we would tell you to make the most of it, that if you land in the morning, you drive up to and take the Golden Circle for the first day. The Golden Circle is the geyser, who is our Icelandic international name for geysers. And then the Golden Waterfall, which is called in Iceland the Gullfoss. And a few things on the way. You might go to the Sigrid Lagoon, which is a very old swimming pool from late 1890 or so. And then there is also a very famous tomato greenhouse, which is a fantastic restaurant.
Well, let's do that just a little slower. So you started us at the geyser. Yeah. This is a geyser, for those of us in English, and it is the geyser after which all geysers are named.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we would say that the Golden Circle is something you can do also in 2 days. So the first day you come and take the geyser and the Gullfoss, geyser you say, and maybe the Sigrid Lagoon or something like that. And then you drive down to us and have a fabulous dinner and quiet good night. If you're in the wintertime, of course, you are there mainly to see the Northern Lights, which of course is both a bonus and but sometimes already a given thing, but you never know. We usually say that you have about, if you stay 4 nights with us, we say you have about 80% chance of seeing them. But that's on the average. Sometimes you might see them every night. So that would be more or less our recommendation for the first day.
Well, hang on. And I want to go again into more detail. We stopped at the geyser. It goes off periodically. I don't remember how often, but I think 5 to 10 minutes or so. So it's very easy, unlike some geysers, to get there and to see it erupt.
Absolutely.
Not quite as spectacular as some of the geysers we've got in Yellowstone, but it's a geyser. It's cool. And see that. And then you stopped us at the Gullfoss waterfall.
Right.
And we're in a national park at this point.
You will have passed by the national park at that time. I was saying that if that was in the winter time, for example, you would not have time to do the whole Golden Circle in one day.
Because we're not going to have enough light.
Yes, because we have only 3 hour light.
Here. Okay. I'm sorry, say that again. Only 3 hours of light?
3.5 hour maybe, okay?
Okay.
In the middle, in December. But you can do a lot of things in a 3-4 hour daylight if you really plan it.
Okay.
If I go a little bit back and I say that if it was in the summertime, and you had slept on the plane, so you're ready for a whole day.
Right.
Then, of course, you can drive through Þingvellir. Þingvellir is our old parliament since 930, the oldest parliament in the world. And those are also where the flakes meet, the American and the European. So it's very interesting geologically also to stop there. And then you can take the national park.
So where the plates meet, where the two different tectonic plates meet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then you can easily start there. And from there, you drive to Geysir and Gullfoss.
Right.
And you stop either on the way there in a very nice place called Efstidalur and have lunch, or you do it in the tomato greenhouse after you have seen the Gullfoss and Geysir. And that will give you a full day ending up at the Secret Lagoon before you come to the hotel.
And you say the Secret Lagoon I don't know.
Secret Lagoon is a very old swimming pool.
Okay, so this is one of the community pools.
Well, not anymore. It had been closed for quite many years or not used.
Okay.
Because it was not sort of fancy enough. Of course, you wanted a pool which was made of concrete and you had some places to change clothes and everything, had not been the case in the old days. But now, some 10, 15 years ago, they reopened it in a very nice way. It's very, very old style, old looking, but very clean and really a fantastic place.
Now, a lot of people who, well, the tourism brochures will talk about the Blue Lagoon, which is not really a natural pool, but it's the cooling pools for a power plant, if I recall.
Right.
And it's a little expensive, and I'm not going to meet a lot of Icelanders there. So is this a good alternative to that, or would you say, no, everybody should do the Blue Lagoon?
Well, it's a very difficult question, you know, because we get this question all the time, and mm-hmm. it's very easy to say that most people who come to Iceland, they want to see or experience the Blue Lagoon.
Right.
And I understand that 100%. But on the other hand, the places like the Sigrid Lagoon or some other lagoons we have, it is a totally different experience.
Mm-hmm.
But the Blue Lagoon is fantastic, no question about that. But the Sigrid Lagoon, for example, was used in the old days to teach people to swim. Almost everybody in Iceland knows how to swim. That's obligatory in our schools, in mm-hmm. the children's schools. And in those days, that lagoon was used for that, not anymore.
Hmm. Okay. I think we did one other stop, which you hadn't suggested, which I did enjoy, is on the way to the Golden Circle, I believe we stopped in one of the power plants, one of the geothermal power plants that heats and lights Reykjavik.
That's right.
Iceland being amazing in terms of the large percentage of power that comes from geothermal. And so it was fascinating to see, and to see these great big insulated pipes, because the hot water from Reykjavik mostly came from this plant. So it's preheated by the earth rather than heated with fossil fuels or something like that. Does mean when you're showering in Reykjavik, you get a little sulfur smell in your shower. But I thought that was, especially as somebody who likes engineering, I thought it was a fascinating stop.
It's a fascinating stop. It can be both. There are two of them, actually. One is that heats up the water you're talking about.
Yeah.
That you use in Reykjavik. That is in Thingvellir. It's close to the national park, or in the national park almost. Mm-hmm. And the other one is on road number one, leaving Reykjavik.
Okay.
But talking about the smell of the water, it's quite interesting that in Reykjavik, it's just not that much smell because it is blended with heated cold water, just normal water. But in other parts of the country, in many places, you will find it really smelly. And we kind of like that.
Okay. Excellent. So then you finished us up with Golden Circle in the first day or the first 2 days. And where do we go from there?
Right. Then we go into more planning. What we usually do for people when they come to the hotel, we talk to them at night, see what they have been planning themselves, and help them to sit down and plan other things. On the average, I would say that most people, I would say 80% of the people who come, they want to take a super jeep tour. You know, the super jeeps, you know, the jeeps with the big tires, they can deflate okay. them, and they drive into the most impossible places to go. They cross rivers, they cross very rough terrain, or they take you in the super jeep up to the mountains, even up to Eyjafjallajökull, up on the glacier.
Okay. And that would be the one that was called by so many newscasters the Iceland volcano, because they didn't even want to try and give a pronunciation to Eyjafjallajökull, which I know is wrong. So it's the volcano under the glacier that exploded, what was it, 10 years ago now, and shut down all the flights in Europe.
And that's right, 2010. And we got very funny questions about that sometimes, because it was a hell of a lot of ash and
plumes
that came out. And that went over to Europe. So they closed all the flights in Europe for a long time, and even up to the States. But our airport was open some days when the European airports were closed.
Mm-hmm.
And we got sometimes very funny questions from, mainly from Americans calling, saying, why is it that the international airport in Iceland is open, but your volcano is next to it? That was because the wind was going the other way.
Right.
And in the super jeep, of course, it's costly, but mm-hmm. it's a very nice experience, especially going up on the glaciers. And then we have quite a lot of other activities, like buggy tours. We have very sandy areas.
A buggy tour?
Yeah, buggy. The sand buggies.
Okay. That's what I thought you were saying, but I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, we have the ATVs.
Yeah.
That's also very, very popular. You can go in quite different places, and there are several guys around us who would organize that for you. So 1 or 2 days, you can easily do things like that. And that is very easy, very close to us, only 5 to 20 minutes to go to those places where you can enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we're going from over to where you are, and the closest city to where you are is which city?
City.
Town.
Okay. Or I would say village.
That was I deserved that. Okay.
All right. We are out in the nowhere, sort of, but we're 5 or 6 kilometers to the nearest two villages.
Okay.
If you want to go to a town, you would have to go to Selfoss, which is about 30 minutes away.
Got it. Okay.
Of course, if you want to go, there is a very nice town on the island, Vestmann Islands. That is one of the places that we send everybody to. And you take a boat, a ferry boat. Did you have a chance to go there?
I did not, no.
The Vestmann Island, it's only about 30 kilometers from the hotel is the ferry boat, which takes about other 30 minutes to get over to the islands. It's a famous place for many things. They had a huge eruption there in 1973, and it's very volcanic. There are about 5,000 people living there, and this is the second or the third biggest fishing town in the country.
Okay.
And there is usually in the summertime abundance of the puffin, the birds,
okay,
and a lot of other things to see. It's one of my favorite places in the country, actually.
Hmm. Well, you've mentioned winter and summer, and obviously I'm going to have to choose when I'm going to come. A lot of people coming in the winter when they're seeing the northern lights, as you mentioned. A lot of people coming in the summer when they've got those really long days. Do you have a recommendation?
Yes. I think after 18 years in this business that I've come to the conclusion, really, that the best time, if you want to get the most out of it, is to come late August, or very late August, or the whole month of September, even into October.
Okay.
Then the day is still pretty long, so you can do a lot of activities in the daylight. You have a very good chance to see the Northern Lights in September, October, even late August. I can tell you, last night, we are now late April. There were fantastic Northern Lights at 1:30 this morning, and we have the night watch. They look outside every 10 minutes during the whole night. We take it very seriously. And so he woke everybody up at 1:30 this morning, and people were very surprised. They didn't expect it because we have so...
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to christwex.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Long days now already.
Right.
But they were really nice lights. Another thing about late summer, early autumn, is that we are located next to an area which is called Fjallabak in Icelandic, which means behind the mountains. That's
okay.
A beautiful area, very picturesque in many ways, quite easy to drive around in a decent 4x4, but it's open only from late June into middle or end of September. So it is, in my opinion, this is the best time to come to get the most out of it. If you want to stay for 6-7 days, this time of the year is really fantastic.
Well, and I'm trying to figure out where you're located there. If you're between the mountains, are you north of Eyjafjallajökull?
No, I'm west of it.
You're west of it. Okay.
Southwest.
Okay.
Southwest. I am very close to civilization, if I can call it like that, because if you go, I have another hotel actually up in the mountains, but that is in a totally different area. That's in this Fjallabak area. Okay. But to get the most out of it, of course, it can be fantastic to be in the summer. Mm-hmm. People find it sometimes difficult to sleep because you have the 24-hour daylight from May 20th to July 20th for 60 days or so, especially if you travel with kids. They find it quite interesting. Like even if we have very good curtains to make it dark in the rooms,
right.
They know it's bright outside and the birds are singing and they find it a little bit disturbing to go to bed. Mm-hmm. And in the wintertime, of course, we have a very short day.
Right. Yeah, I was there in about mid-October, and I saw some of those September days you were talking about that were just gorgeous. I have pictures of driving along the south coast, and we haven't talked about waterfalls. We probably should. There's one or two on the south coast there, and these beautiful pictures of rainbows and blue skies and things. And then, of course, because I was a little further in the season, I did the next day we were in the Snøfoss Peninsula. Yes. Yeah. Am I at all close there? And I think the wind was so strong that day that we were, all our pictures were leaning at about a 30-degree angle just to stay upright in the wind. And so it was a little mixed that time of year. So September probably would be wonderful, I would think.
It is. But the one thing we shouldn't forget to mention, that is we have a lot of horses.
Yes.
Did you happen to be introduced to them?
Oh, yeah. I was traveling with a local, and he stopped by and got a loaf of bread so we could feed the horses.
Right. No, they are very popular also for tourists because they have this special gait. We call it the fifth gait. It's called tölt, and it's totally different from most other species of horses. Mm-hmm. So it is very common. There are three or four very nice places all around us where you would go, and they would show it to you. They will show you all the different gates. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they will also allow you to try them, whether you are a horse man or not. And they do this very well, and it's very popular. They are very nice animals. They are smaller than the ordinary horse. The other horses you know are the species. Mm-hmm. Please don't call them ponies, because then everybody will be very offended. They are just a little bit smaller than most of the other species. Okay. And that is something that we recommend to a lot of our guests. One more thing we should mention is we have ice caves. Mm-hmm. Of course, they come and go because the glacier is crawling forward all the time, and they melt, and then you find other caves. And this is something that the guides, the activity people, activity companies, they find new caves almost every year. Mm-hmm. And it's very popular to drive into there. You have to do that with a guide and a driver because most of the places are pretty rough roads mm-hmm. to get there. But that is very picturesque and very educating. I would say the Americans travel a little bit differently than our European friends in the way that there are more families coming from the U.S. Quite often three generations, where the oldest generation is more or less paying for the trip. They're obviously inviting them to come with them. Mm-hmm. And they do it, I would say, beautifully, because they really know that this is a one-of-a-kind tour. So they plan what they can before, but they are very open for other suggestions and spend usually some days with us and get a lot of interesting activities into the program, even if it's only a week.
You mentioned it being beautiful, and we've talked a little bit about, I've hinted that there are waterfalls. We haven't really talked about what the geography looks like down in the part of Iceland that you're like. How would you describe it to someone who hasn't seen it?
Well, the southern part where we are is pretty mm-hmm. flat, mm-hmm. but you have the view to mountains all around mm-hmm. you, wherever you are. And this is probably the flattest part of the country, but you don't need to drive more than 15, 20 minutes to get to the nearest mountain.
Right.
that's something that our tourists explained to us. And of course, I've traveled a lot myself. And I would say that what makes Iceland different in many ways is that you can easily drive in a few hours. You can drive from the black sand beach to a very mm-hmm. green, grassy area into where you find the waterfalls. Or you go a little bit further up on the mountain, there you meet the glaciers coming down. The next thing you will see is a hot spring, etc. It's the variation is incredible. You can experience a lot of interesting things, even just in one day.
I was looking at my pictures from that trip recently because we were doing an article on Amateur Traveler about the southern coast of Iceland. And I was looking at ones where I was standing at a picturesque lighthouse near Vik or Vik.
Yes.
And you're right. You can just see for miles or perhaps for kilometers, if I'm in Iceland, down a black sand beach along the coast with white-capped, well, glacier-capped mountains in the distance. Very beautiful. But you described it very well. Very flat, very open.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This lighthouse is on top of Dyrhólaey. Mm-hmm. This is called in Icelandic, and we sometimes say that that is the best view you can have of the Black Beach. And underneath there is the famous Black Sand Beach, which is which almost everybody coming to Iceland wants to see for several reasons. Of course, at first of the sand is very, very black. The stones around there and the rocks there are very beautiful, and the sea is always very rough. And sometimes people say it's best to go there when it's crazily windy, because then the sea is really sort of showing its power in a big way. And this place, Vik, as you mentioned, is where you start the glacier cave tour. It's from Vik. And from Vik is also, you see very well out to the Vestmann Islands. So because it's in the middle.
Well, then I do want your opinion on, if I'm driving along the south coast, there's a waterfall every, 20 feet? I may be exaggerating that a little bit, but there's quite a few. Do you have some favorites that tourists should not miss?
Of course, the waterfall that you can walk behind, Seljalandsfoss, it's probably the most, as the best known. Then, of course, when you drive further east towards Vik, and if we just start from Rangar, just to make it simple, you start from the hotel,
you can
drive a little detour into a very populated area, you know, I mean farming area, not populated really. There you see a place called Gluggafoss, which means the window waterfall, which is beautiful. Then you drive back down on the main road, and then you come to the Seljalandsfoss, where you can walk behind. Mm-hmm. And there is another one next to it, only a few, as you say, 20 feet away.
Not quite 20 feet away, but an easy hike.
Exactly, very easy hike. That's called Gljúfrabúi, which means somebody who lives in a canyon. You have to go there in there on stepping stones, and it's quite nice. Then further out towards Vik and the Black Sand Beach, you come to Skógar and the Skógafoss. Very picturesque waterfall. And there, we shouldn't forget to mention, there is a fabulous museum. It's a communication, it's a transport museum, it's a museum of old houses and old boats and everything.
Oh, right.
It is by far the biggest museum you find in the country. And it's really, really fantastic. Museum people can easily spend a day there. And it's in a beautiful location too.
And that's the Skógar Museum?
Skógar, yeah. Skógar Museum. And that is next to the Skógar waterfall.
Got it.
And Icelandic foss means waterfall.
Right. And the waterfall that you're talking about there, you can also hike to the top of if you've got the knees for it and get some lovely views down.
Yes. Having said all this, you know, this is, of course, we are talking about the things that you see and do if you're mainly sort of following the main tracks in the country. But there are so many possibilities, especially if you come out of the main season, sort of, as we said, in late, let's say in September. Then with a decent 4x4, and you have to ask around, of course, you shouldn't do anything stupid. You have to follow the weather forecast and things like that. Then you can go into other areas which are very close to you, nevertheless, within maybe 1 or 2 hour drive, where you see totally different landscape. There is practically no one there. Those are roads which are gravel roads, of course, and they have small rivers or small streams that you can cross if you do know how to do that. So you sometimes say, or I sometimes say to people that, in a way, Iceland is a different place. If you want to do the ordinary things, of course, you do the ordinary things. If you want to do something which is a little bit out of what most people do, then, of course, you should always do that with a very good advice from the locals or do it with the locals. But there are endless opportunities.
Is there an example of where you would send somebody who did rent the 4x4 and has a sense of adventure?
One of the best known places is Landmannalaugar. Landmannalaugar. It's a long name, and it's about 1.5 hour drive, or let's say 2 hour drive from my hotel.
Okay.
In a decent 4x4, you can easily do that. Almost all the way, there is only a few hundred meters that we always recommend that people leave the car because there are two big rivers you cross, but it's only a very nice walk. In there is a natural hot pool, which you can get into, and beautiful mountains, very colorful. And if you Google it, for example, you will see it's really one of a kind. Landmannalaugar, it's called.
And that's assuming I can spell it well enough to Google it, but I'll look that up and put that in the show notes.
Yes, but up there, they are part of what I talked about before, this Fjallabak, this behind the mountain. Bak means the same in English, back, and Fjalla is mountains. So I speak maybe too much about this, but practically, I would have to say that this is one of the places I love.
Excellent. Now, there's a national park that has that in its name, or is that the region we're in?
No. There are three national parks. One is in the Snæfellsnes, mentioned before. One is in Þingvellir, the old parliament. It's a small one. And then Vatnajökull, there is a national park called the name of Vatnajökull, which is the biggest glacier in Europe. It's a little bit further east towards Höfn or over there. There is also a very, very interesting place which everybody wants to see if they have time. That's the Glacier Lagoon.
Right.
And the so-called Diamond Beach, which is not really called that in Icelandic, but it's how it became known as the Diamond Beach. That's about 3 hour drive from our hotel, but it's a very nice drive, especially if the weather is nice, because you have fantastic view to the glaciers, both on the east and the west side. If you're driving east, you have Vatnajökull in front of you, the big glacier. On the way back, you have Eyjafjallajökull in front of you. So that's you have a nice view all the time.
Well, and you say Diamond Beach. There are not actually diamonds on this beach. We should give people some explanation here. It's ice.
Yes, it's ice. It's ice, and also quite a lot of, quite often you might see seals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're quite often around that area. No, that's a really unique place. There are two lagoons there at the moment. One is the Glacier Lagoon, called in Icelandic Jökulsárlón, and the other one is Fjallslón. Fjalls, again, like the mountain. That's only 2-3 kilometers between them. So they are sort of both very nice.
Well, and I get a lot of people, that's their, when they talk about the South Coast, they kind of end it there. Is that a logical place to, I mean, you can do the whole ring road, and we've done an episode of Amateur Traveler way back on driving all the way around, and that's going to take you a little more time if you want to actually see something, if you don't want to just drive it, which I think you should take some time and see it. I think a couple weeks is probably a better time period for that.
If you want to take the whole round, yes, it would be. But you're absolutely right that a lot of people, they look at Iceland, sort of the first trip to Iceland is pretty logical. As you have to land at the southwest corner in Keflavik Airport, it's quite logical to take the southwest part. And quite a lot of people that would try to go all the way out to the Glacier Lagoon because it's fantastic. And some of them go a little bit further to Höfn, which is a very nice village or even a town, and stay there. And in the wintertime, a lot of people staying with us, they drive back and forth. It's no problem to do that when you have 24-hour daylight. In the wintertime, they do more of sort of stay with us and go to the Glacier Lagoon and sleep overnight in a hotel near to that so that they get the most out of the daylight.
That makes sense. Excellent. What else should we see while we're in the south coast of Iceland?
That's a good question. What we do when we are traveling, we always try to go a little bit off the beaten track. I love myself, and if I'm taking tourists around, to go off the main road and drive up place, it's a valley called Þjórsárdalur, which is very close to the Secret Lagoon. There is a crossroad, Road 30 and Road 32. Road 32 takes you up to my other hotel, actually, and that's also the way into Landmannalaugar. And there are some beautiful waterfalls, like one is called Háifoss, which means the high waterfall. That's the second highest waterfall in the country.
Okay.
You can only get to that one after middle of June, I would say, and into the autumn, because it's very snowy up there.
Got it.
There are very beautiful places for hikers. That area is very beautiful, very nice. And you can really, really hike around everywhere there without meeting anyone.
Do you have a favorite hike in that region or in South Iceland?
There is a favorite, there is a most famous hike, I would say. That is from Landmannalaugar down to a place called Þórsmörk, which is in between the glaciers next to Eyjafjallajökull.
Okay.
Most people hike that in 4 days, and it's very, very popular, so you might have to even book it a year in advance. Some people do it in 2 days, and recently they started with an ultramarathon, which makes everybody else look a little stupid because they run in sort of 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours, but we, the normal people, would do in 4 days with our rucksack. That is the most popular and most famous of all the hikes in the country.
And when you say book it in advance, am I booking a guide? Am I booking a stay in a hut? Or what am I booking exactly?
You are booking the huts to stay in.
The huts to stay in, okay.
Yeah, it's a company called Ferðafélag. I don't remember the English name of it. They own the huts and they plan the tours. In the first tours in the summer, then you're walking on snow, part of the tracks. But the further into the summer, then it becomes sort of easier.
Okay. Got
it. Of course, we understand fully, and I do the same when I'm traveling. I read the guidebooks, and I try to see through the lines, between the lines, what they actually are talking about. When I was 50 years younger, I spent a lot of time in Italy and Spain and Portugal selling fish. And then it was so easy to go and see all these fantastic places like Colosseum or whatever it was you wanted to see in these big cities. Now it's a hell of a problem because you may have to stand in lines for hours to get there. Fortunately, that is nothing that you have to do in Iceland. There is practically no place I can remember that you have to stay in line for, unless it was if you want to get a hot dog down in Reykjavik or something like that. But
a hot dog, I'm getting a cup of coffee.
Yes, right. Okay. Absolutely. No lines for the coffee. No, but Iceland is so easy in the way that, and you are welcome more or less everywhere. As long as you're not driving off the track, you're not allowed to do that. You have to be careful with nature because our nature is very sensitive. But you can drive whatever little track you see, and if there is no sign asking you not to do it or something, you are free to do so. And you can go out of your car. You walk to the horses and say hello to them. They are very curious. The same is with, most of the people, they just like that you are there to see their country. And as long as you respect both the people and the landscape and the soil and the animals, you are very, very welcome.
Now, before we had a pandemic, there was some talk that Iceland in the summertime, in the peak season, was getting a little over-touristed. First of all, do you agree? Second is, where was that? Was that all around the island, or was that only in Reykjavik? Or
it was, of course, touristic in the way that we felt it was very touristic.
Yeah.
But if you go to places like Paris or Barcelona or wherever in the summer or something like that, you would not use the same word.
Okay. Over-touristed, it is a relative term in Iceland.
It is a very relative term.
Okay.
But I think that, of course,
there wasn't bumper-to-bumper cars along the ring road.
Well, it can happen, of course, during some time in the late Friday, people get out of town or something like that. But what they were talking about was, of course, mainly in the very touristic places.
Sure.
As I mentioned before about Colosseum, for example, certain times of the day, it might be a lot of people around the places we mentioned where everybody wants to go. But in that case, it's easy for you not to go there when it's the middle of the day. Go there in the morning or in the night. Sometimes it's even interesting. Some people like to, in the summertime, to travel in the night. For example, I can tell you a little for up north in Akureyri, which is up north, and you can do the same in the south. They started midnight golf.
Okay, sure.
Some people do that also in our area.
Yeah.
They come to have dinners already in the restaurant at 8 o'clock. So around 10 o'clock at night, they leisurely sort of start moving, and around 11, they start playing. They stay and they play until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And it's fabulous. Sun is coming up at 4 o'clock or 3, 4 o'clock. Funny. The birds are singing. And honestly, it is fantastic to stay outside in the summertime in Iceland in the night.
Excellent. One thing we haven't talked about is food. Are there particular dishes we should look for, or particular, you mentioned the tomato greenhouse where we should go, any other place that you would recommend we stop on our tour to the southern coast?
Well, of course, you should have dinner with me.
Well, of course.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think I can say very proudly that all over Iceland, we have pretty good restaurants. And I think we, more or less wherever you go, people try to use local products as much mm-hmm. as they can. And we have fabulous lamb meat, for example, which mm-hmm. Iceland is known for. All the fish you get right. is Icelandic. And we have good beef. We have good sort of a lot of things. We have a lot of good vegetables. But I would say that if I look at my menu and our experience after sort of 18 years, that we sell a lot of the lamb meat and mm-hmm. cod, for example, which is our main fish. Salmon, of course, is on the menu. Mm-hmm. We have on the menu a reindeer carpaccio. We have okay. reindeers in the country, but we also import a little bit of it. And all kind of local products. I sometimes say also that when you're talking about the activities when you're traveling, mm-hmm. what is activity? Activity is what you are doing in between you are sleeping, right? Or traveling.
Right.
I think the most underestimated activity when people are talking about activity is eating, because it's an experience wherever you go, mm-hmm. or at least wherever I go, it is more important for me than many other things is to get to try what the locals are eating and how they prepare it. And I think we are doing pretty good job in that in Iceland, wherever you go. I think I would hardly mention any other place that you could not go to and be pretty sure. Of course, it's different. You may go mm-hmm. to the petrol stations and that might, you know, you're getting decent food wherever you go.
I remember stopping on the Golden Circle at one of the, you say petrol stations, but one of just the little cafes that I think were official places along that route, and having a great bowl of lamb stew. So I don't know that I would denigrate the petrol stations necessarily, but although on the other hand, you mentioned the fish. We went, when I was there, to a place near Reykjavik where they were drying some of the fish, definitely one of the stinkiest places I've ever been, to sell it down to fish head stew to Nigeria and places.
Yeah.
Fascinating to see, although you have to have a strong sense of smell. No, I think the weak sense of smell is probably what you need to enjoy that, true.
But it's a very interesting point, I tell you. Mm-hmm. We had, in the old days, we had only two ways to preserve the fish, and the fish was always our main export.
Right.
One was to dry it, as you experienced there, which was not in big quantities. But the other one was the salted.
Sure, right.
Which is called bacalao internationally. And those were the main markets in Mediterranean countries at that time. It's only early last century that we got the freezing technique.
Right.
So we could start freezing products. And then, of course, that then became the big market in the U.S. and all over the place. We even sell a lot of fish frozen to Japan and very specialized products that they buy for their market. So that's a totally different topic we could talk about another day.
Excellent.
Overall, one more thing I would mention about food. Most people here, we are sweet. We are sweet tools. So we eat a lot of cakes and we love cakes. Nowadays, unfortunately, with all these healthy food issues, we are eating less cakes. I think cakes are very good for you. And
you just need a good cake and then a good hike. That's the thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. If you have a good hike, you can eat much more cakes. So, of course, then we have several products, which you mentioned the dried fish. We also have haukarl, the shark.
That is where I draw the line, though. When you say you have shark, explain how this is produced.
We have shark, which is called haukarl, mm-hmm. and it's fermented.
Yeah.
So the tourists, they call it the rotten fish, which is not right. really right. It's fermented. And the same is with skate wings. We have also skate wings, which are mm-hmm. fermented. Very, very strong smell, very right. strong taste. If you like, I sometimes ask people if they ask around if I have it, and then I say, okay, I warn you. And then I ask them, back, do you like very, 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 very strong steel tone? And if they say yes to that, then I say, okay, if you like very, very, very strong cheese, you right. will like this. And that's usually the case. It's very strong, but it's fun to try. And then, of course, we shouldn't forget skyr. Skyr is a milk product in between yogurt and sour milk or something. Okay. It's fantastic. It's skyr. It's been exported to the States now a lot. S-K-Y-R. Skyr. You can find it in many stores.
Okay.
We eat this for breakfast. We eat this for lunch. We eat this for dinner. We eat it all the time. And with a little bit of sugar, of course.
All and cream,
if you like to really treat yourself.
Anything else we need to cover before we get to some of our wrap-up questions?
Well, I said before, when you ask things like that, I'm sure we forget something interesting.
So. I'm sure we did.
Yeah.
I'm sure we did. We do every week.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, excellent. Let me give you a question. You're standing in the prettiest spot in southern Iceland. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think I would be standing very close to what you mentioned before, but up on the top of Eyjafjallajökull.
Okay. So I'm on the glacier.
On the glacier.
Okay.
You just went up there in a super jeep or a snowmobile, which we didn't mention. We have a lot of snowmobile tours.
Mm-hmm.
And you just get off that vehicle and we shut it all down. It's totally, absolutely no sound whatsoever.
Mm.
It's one of those few calm days we have and sunny, and you don't know where you really are.
Excellent. And you've traveled a fair amount. So one thing that makes you laugh when you come back to Iceland.
What I love is we have a flight coming from London
mm-hmm.
in the night. It leaves London around 10 o'clock, and it's dark, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit next to someone who's coming to Iceland for the first time, and we are talking, and he's looking out of the window. Of course, it's dark, and slowly we get into the daylight, and we land in Keflavik at 12 o'clock midnight, and it's a bright day, and we walk out, and he says, "Where am I?" Because you fly into the daylight. It's fantastic.
There are moments I remember in Iceland that I had exactly that same kind of where am I. I think of near Reykjavik, there's the, and I'm see if I can remember it correctly, there's a lava flow from 1,000 years ago. And I think they call it the Christianity lava flow because it's around the time that Christianity was introduced to Iceland. And we went in a lava tube in there. And so you get this very sharp, very spiky rock that forms this lava tube. And then surrounding that or covering that is about 3 inches of moss. And it was just a very, I don't know, Dr. Seuss moment. It was a landscape that didn't look like it could possibly be real.
No.
And that was probably one of my where am I kind of moments in Iceland.
I understand you. And we didn't mention too much the volcanoes we have and the volcanic mm-hmm. activities. Of course, we had one last year lasting for several months. And you're probably referring to the volcano where you can go down into the tube itself. Did you go?
I was in a lava tube closer to, very close to Reykjavik, close or, to Reykjavik. Although you say Reykjavik different than I do, so I'm saying that wrong, I understand now.
Right. No, it's into the earth, you go into the volcano. It's mm-hmm. a very fabulous tour, but of course it's a little bit difficult to get there, unless you take a helicopter from Reykjavik, but that's one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, the moss, that is one of the reasons why we are so picky about our nature and mm-hmm. where you're hiking, where you're driving, what you're doing. Because this moss is not grown in a few years.
Right.
It has taken a long mm-hmm. time to be there. So that's why we are very, very careful when it comes to our nature.
Excellent. And Friedrich, if you wanted to summarize Iceland for someone who hasn't been there in 3 words, what 3 words would you pick?
I would say the country is beautiful, people are friendly, and you will feel welcome.
Excellent. And our guest again has been Friedrich Paulsen. And you mentioned your hotel a few times, but I don't know that you gave the name of the hotel. So let's do that before we close here, or the two hotels.
Yeah, the hotel is called Rangau, spelling R-A-N-G-A, Rangau, which is the name of the river that also is floating around on the bank mm-hmm. of the river. And the other one is more difficult. That's called the Highland Center in English, in Highland Center. and Hraunar in Icelandic. But the Highland Center, it will work.
Excellent. And I'll put links to both of those in the show notes.
Thank you very much. It's been very nice talking to you and very nice to know that you've been in Iceland and you seem to have remembered quite well what you have been doing.
Oh, well, it is a memorable place. I quite enjoyed the one trip and I want to get back and bring my wife back. She missed that last trip, so.
That would be fantastic. And say hello.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for your home country of Iceland.
Thank you.
Special thanks go out to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially and sometimes emotionally as well. If you're interested in learning how to become a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I heard recently from Trey who said, "Hey man, just wanted to drop you a very quick note here as I pack my bag in Abu Dhabi for a quick trip to Nur Sultan, Kazakhstan, featured on episode 307, in case you were wondering. I find myself always looking up one of your episodes before I take off to a new place. You ask your guests the best, most insightful questions, and I always get more out of my trips because of it. Thanks for providing the most interesting podcast out there. All the best, Trey." Well, thanks so much. I'm glad you feel that way. And it's always encouraging for me to hear that, and especially that hear that people are using the show to actually travel. I also heard from Nat, who said, "Thank you so much for your wonderful podcast. I can't believe it has taken me so long to find it. Myself and my husband and three teenage children are planning a trip to Central America at the end of the year, and we are so enjoying hearing about your Mexico and Costa Rica trips and interviews, and I am so excited that there are so many podcasts for me to listen to. I just love to travel. So thank you for fulfilling that interest while the world, well, at least Australia and New Zealand, are getting back to normal. I just wanted to say thank you." And Nat, you are so welcome. And lastly, I got this brief note from Tessa, who said, "My husband and I just went to Egypt and Jordan a couple weeks ago, and your podcast helped us prep and feel ready. It was my first time in Africa and the Middle East. We had a fabulous time." So good to hear it. I can't tell you how encouraging it is to hear people not just be able to travel, especially after the last couple of years, but also to feel like they are ready for the places they go to and hopefully to stretch their comfort zone a little bit and get to someplace new. And Egypt and Jordan are two amazing places to go, as are so many places we talk about on Amateur Traveler. Speaking of amazing places, Turkey is an amazing place, and I'd love for you to go with me in September. We may have more openings on that trip than I had planned for, as I mentioned last week, because of one of the people who was coming with us, a friend of mine, has a daughter's wedding to prepare for, which is great news, but unfortunately, they may not be able to make the trip. And so if you're interested in coming with me to Turkey, go to amateurtraveler.com/turkey2022, and I look forward to seeing you there. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.